sabrosura, papi, que que.
Hello, everyone. This is Bam, the Café con Bam, the bilingual podcast that features Latine and people of the global majority who break barriers, change lives, and make the world a better place. Welcome to episode 357 of Café con Bam. Today, we have a conversation with Laura Similian. Laura is the founder of Seasoned by the Sun, a CBD skincare line. She's also the chief operating officer of Low Key Dispensary. And alongside her husband, they're a family-owned dispensary in the city of Boston, Massachusetts. Laura has also been working as a research administrator for the past 10 years. But most importantly, she's a mom of two little ones and a wife to her best friend and business partner. Listeners, this conversation with Laura was so insightful because we went through her story. We share actually a similar story, which was great to find someone who came to the US a little bit older. And we shared a lot about the intricacies and the complications of going to college, being a first one in your family to go to college in the US. Not necessarily, I don't think that's a first gen college experience, but it's a first time in the US college experience, which is different. And we really talked about so many various things that I think you will resonate, especially when it comes to creating something and allowing yourself, allowing life, being open for the full circle moments. Because in Laura's story, there was a full circle moment that when we talked about it, I was like, oh, that's amazing. Y bueno, sin más, aquí está mi conversación con Laura Similian. Well, Laura, welcome to Café con Bam.
Hi, how are you?
I am well. Thank you for asking. And tell us, where you're tuning in from?
I am live from Boston, Massachusetts.
Fun. I guess it's not super cold right now, is it?
No. We've had like some great days lately. So today I think it's like in the 60s. Yeah, we're really excited. I bet. It is very cold here though, normally.
I know, indeed. And the question that we always ask is, what is your heritage?
I was born and raised in the Dominican Republic, and I moved to the United States when I was 12. So Dominican Republic.
And you landed in Boston?
Yeah, actually I did. My father came like before the rest of my family. And he came here for maybe like 2 months. He got a job here in Boston. And then we followed like, 2 months later.
Was that a family conversation? Was it like all of a sudden you were moving? How did that happen?
Yeah. So, it's actually interesting because what I remember of my life in the Dominican Republic was like, it was really nice. My father is a surgeon.
And warm.
My father is a surgeon and my mom is a dentist. That's what they went to school for. So, I'd say I live like a pretty, privileged life, I'd say, in the Dominican Republic. And then my dad's side of the family, they all lived in New York. So that was always kind of like in the back of his head, I think. And then, they just decided that, for us to have like bigger opportunities, maybe like a move to the United States would make sense. And we had a residency and then we just decided to move. But it was kind of shocking for me though, for real, because I was in a like private school. I had friends, friends that I've known since I was like in kindergarten. But at the same time, it was like exciting for us because it was like something new,
Totally. And so I'm curious about the culture shock to the 12-year-old you received. Did you went from private school in the DR to private school in the US?
No. I went to Catholic school in Dominican Republic, and like my mom was a student there. My grandma opened, she was part of like the people, the students that kind of like opened up the school. So it was kind of like a tradition, I guess, for us to go to this school. And obviously it was Catholic, it was heavy on religion. So when I moved here, I actually went to school at John W. McCormick Middle School. And that's in Boston. And it was like a complete culture shock. And
yeah,
it's like, it's crazy how resilient you are as like a kid, you know, because now looking back, I'm like, oh my goodness, that was insane, you know? Yeah, it was rough. And, you know, I remember my dad like shopping for us before, you know, before the big day, before school. So he like took me to Gap and like Old Navy, and we bought like cute little like shirts and they say Gap and like boots, you know, and we were like excited. And then the first day I went to school, they're like, oh, you're wearing Gap? And I was like,
yeah.
Okay, I don't know.
Am I not supposed to?
I know, right? And I didn't even speak English, so I was in like ESL classes.
Glad-o.
Yeah, so that was intense, because you know I was definitely like pretty smart, but you know if you don't know the language, you don't know, you know. So
yeah,
it was pretty tough. But it's again crazy how resilient you are, because in a year or 2 years, like I was already speaking English.
Totally, we adapt so well.
I know.
But the initial shock that happened to me, I went from being a private school privileged girl in Mexico City to moving to LA, landing in one of the biggest high schools in Los Angeles. And mm-hmm. It was intense.
Yeah, it was intense.
And also, like, what threw me off was uniforms. Like, I had to pick my clothes every day.
And at first, like, I don't know, for me at first, I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cute. Like, we can dress right up. Literally, like, 2 weeks in, I'm like, I hate this.
Like, so tired.
I don't know what to wear. Yes. They, like, keep track of what you wear, how many times you wear it. I'm like, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. That was probably one of the, not hardest things, because it wasn't hard, but it was just, like, annoying.
It was different. Yeah, it was super different to get used to.
Yeah. So you're 12, and 12 is also a hard age. There's lots of things happening.
I know. I'm telling you, I look back and I'm like, wow, I was like a strong little girl because, you know, that was intense.
And now that you have kids, you're probably like, oh.
I know. No, now that I have kids, I'm like, I want them to go to the same school. I don't want a lot of changes. Like, I want them, you know what I mean?
Stability.
Like, I'm not going to move. I know. But my husband and I talk all the time. Like, we want to live outside of the United States at some point. So I'm like, you know what? I think that if they're like their mom, they got it.
For sure. And I noticed this a lot with first-gen immigrant kids, especially those who came in early. They, like, never want to move because they experienced it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I feel like, you know, there's pros and cons for everything. I'm not going to tell people how to parent their kids. But if we did it, it's possible for others to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And my husband and I, we talk about, you know, like, I don't want my kids to grow up thinking that this is it, right? Like, this is
yes.
where they have to live. This is where they can work. This is where they can make money. Like, it's not the end all be all, right? So we always talk about this, and that's something that's very important to me, because they can explore. They can go back to my home country. They can go back to where their father is from and make a living and live, like, super happy too, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it exposing people to other countries, that's a very much a thing in the US that I notice.
Oh yeah.
Is that this is a huge bubble, and like from a geographic perspective, from a size of land perspective, like you don't need to leave the US. You know, you can move within the US and like be super far from where you started. And other countries operate different, and I think it's important for people to experience that.
Definitely. Like my husband and I, we went to Europe after for our honeymoon. And I was just so impressed with like so many languages that people speak. And yeah. I'm talking about like everyone. Like, I'm not saying like it's just the like people that went to higher education. No, this is like a thing. This is how they grow up. And I think that's so important. I mean, I wish that the United States would take that a little more serious, because it's just like exposure is what makes you like who you are, in my opinion, you know? So
totally.
I think that's really important.
Agreed. 100%. I have a client. She is from Africa. Well, she's from Ghana, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about this all the time, how the experience, the US experience is significantly different. She's traveled the world, so many countries, and the US experience is very, very unique to the US. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, no other country in the world can like virtually has this. I mean, maybe like similar, but this also the US is a really young country.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I think it varies too from like where you're at, right? Like,
yes.
You know, like I live in Boston and like Boston public schools, that's like one thing. That's like one world. And then if you go to the suburbs, that's like a different type of world, you know? So I think like growing up, I would see like school in, you know, TV shows portrayed how it is in the suburbs, right?
Yes.
So I was like, oh my God, this is really nice. And this is great. I think like depending where you are at in the United States, like you get a different type of schooling, which is not always great, but it's just the truth.
100%. You know what happened to me when I first got here? I came here when I was 13 the first time, and then I left and came back at 19. So I resonate with when you said 12. I'm like, oh yeah, that was a heartache. But what happened to me is I came to LA, and you know, you watch the movies and like specifically scary movies, and I was like, okay, whatever. But then I went to college in the Midwest, in Missouri specifically, and I could not watch scary movies anymore because it was too close to reality.
It was, yeah, that's so true. I you know, we moved to Boston, and this is where I graduated from, like a suburb from Massachusetts, and I actually went to school in North Carolina in the South. It was like completely different than it is here. But yeah, it's like literally like the movies.
100%. So how was it for you as an immigrant Latina to navigate the school system? So we talked about the clothing, and then of course you come from your parents who had an education. Probably it was kind of like an assumption that you were going to go to college. Oh, yeah. How was it for you to navigate the college experience?
Well, it was hard. It was hard because I was the first one. Okay. So my parents are obviously like expecting me to go to college, like to the point that high school graduation wasn't even like, I would see like my friends having parties for high school graduations. And I'm like, this is comparable to like kindergarten for like, it doesn't matter. It's like, this is what you're supposed to do.
Right.
You know,
there's nothing to celebrate.
Right. And they're very traditional, very like I said, they went to dental school, they went to med school. Like this is nothing for them. Right. So I graduated high school. And again, first one in our family to like navigate the college experience. And I think my parents thought like, okay, you graduate high school and you sign up for your college and then, you know, you go to college. And it's like, I did my own FAFSA. Like I applied to my own scholarships, try to get the little bit of money that they could offer. I sat in that financial office, which is like, I still get nightmares about financial office in undergrad with my father. And they are telling us like, oh, take this loan. And all I'm seeing is like thousands and thousands of dollars that I owe. And it was pretty scary. And I think even like I always say, like, I don't wish to go back in many things, right? Because these things kind of shape who you are today. But college, I wish that I could do it again a little differently, right? Because my parents, you know, they came here. They're like, oh, great. You can go to med school, because which is my dream, right? Like I wanted to go to med school. And so I thought. But again, it's the only thing I was exposed to. So of course I wanted to go to med school. So when we came here, they're like, great. Like we're going to go to med school. And in the back of my head, I'm like, I don't even speak English. So I need to like learn English and then learn what I know in English, you know?
Yeah.
So that was pretty hard. I went to college and I major in biology, which, you know, it kind of
pre-med.
Yeah. Pre-med, of course, pre-med track. And I major in biology. You know, I was fairly interested in like formulation, and obviously that brought me to Seasoned by the Sun, but, I enjoyed biology, but like, it wasn't something where I would like thrive in, right? Like I had to work really, really hard to get like average grades, and it was a little discouraging. And then I remember like talking to my parents, and you know, I don't blame them at all, but they were very like, no, like you can do it. Like if people do it, you can do it. And I'm like, yeah. So I tried to change my major, but they kind of like talked me out of it. So I stayed with biology. And you know, I enjoyed it. I learned a lot, but I think that's not where my strengths were, right? So everything comes full circle, because obviously I, you know, was able to use it now, but it wasn't what I thought it would be. So when I went to college, it was mostly like I was trying to survive, trying to learn the process. How do people do this? Living on campus. And like the first 2 years, I kind of like spent doing that, like finding myself, like, what do I do here? Then the next 2 years, I was able to thrive. I pledged for a Latina sorority. It's called LTA, Lambda Theta Alpha. So that was like amazing. And it was like a great experience to be able to be with like women that were like me. Cause I was like super tough in North Carolina. The the Dominican community is very small. So it was so glad to find like Latinas that were, you know, so similar to me, like your background. That's, you know, I was like, wow, like there are people like me here.
Yeah.
So that was like a life-changing experience, was pledging for my sorority, which is why I would always tell people that if they have the opportunity to join Greek life, you know, it's something to think about.
Yeah. Cause then you build a network, like literally for life.
Right. And it's a network that kind of comes easy once you join, right? Because it's like, oh, you're my sister now. Like, this is what we do. You know, it wasn't like, oh, let's be friends and see where it goes. It's like, no, we pledge, we're sisters, let's do this together. So that was pretty, like I said, a great experience for me.
For sure. And I want to talk about the initial process of the FAFSA thing. I went through that as well. Yeah. Because I think the university system in the US is so overly complicated and so like driven by capitalism that I also, like, when you talk about the PTSD from sitting at the FAFSA office, in my case, I was there by myself because I was working full time and living there full time.
Incredible.
Yeah. And so they were just like, yeah, you can get this loan. And like, oh, and by the way, their scholarship is, and I didn't know the difference. So it's really like something I think worth talking about. I mean, I think there's a lot of people talking about it now, and like, yay for people that have created businesses around helping students navigate this, because it's hard.
It is. It's super hard. Like, to the point that I remember sitting in the financial aid office and I'm like talking to my dad with this like financial counselor, and I don't think these people have like the best intention for me. No. Like, they're just doing their job. You know, I don't think they're like, oh, this is the best way for you. So like, here I am, like my dad and I, like no idea what's going on. They're like, oh, you can get, like, this is one of the craziest things that I did as a young person. I laugh now because it's so ridiculous. They're telling me like, oh, like you have these, like, I think they're called Pell Grants. And they were
Pell,
like,
grants?
Yeah, they
were. Pell Grants still.
Yeah, me too, girl. Me too. And I think they said, oh, like Pell Grants, like they don't, I guess they don't have interest, or it was something like, it was a benefit.
It's a good deal.
And
quote.
Then, yeah, it's a good deal. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then they're like, but if you take this one, which is like back then it was like Sallie Mae, they're like, they give you like all of the money, you know, Pell Grant was only going to cover some of it. And then if you get Navient, you can Navient now, right? You can, you know, they'll give you all of the money for all of the 4 years. So me and my dad are like, oh, no brainer. We're doing Sallie Mae. And then here I am. Like,
here we,
like,
are still paying student loans.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's just, it's like, you know, it's really tough. It's really tough to be an immigrant that is trying to go to college here. Cause like you said, it's so overly complicated. I remember telling my father, like, oh, dad, I need like $600 to submit applications. And he's like, what? To submit an application? I'm like, yeah, like if I want to apply, like I have to have this type of money. And it's like, that's hard, right? Like, that's hard for like a, you know, we come here, we're immigrants, and like, we are just, my dad is just trying to adapt. My mom is just trying to adapt. And then like, here we are, you know?
Yeah.
So that was extremely challenging. Yeah.
For sure. And you did it.
Yeah, so, I did it.
So you go through biology. You also do early child development. Was that a double major?
I did. It was a double major. So I did biology and like child development. And
so you were like, fine parents. I'll keep
I was
biology.
Like, sure. Yeah, I was like, sure, I'll do that. But I just knew like I was not going to go to med school. Like, I knew, you know, you have to know yourself. Like, you look at the people around you, you look at the background they had. Like I said, like, I was trying to learn English. These people are taking like STEM, like summer camp, you know
what
I mean?
They have tutors.
Like,
yes.
Yeah. Like, that's different. Like, I'm trying to learn the language. You guys have private tutors for this. So it's like, I'm not saying I'm less smart or more smart, but like the circumstances were different. Yeah, the resources were not there, you know? Yeah. So I looked around and I'm like, yeah, this is not, like, I don't fit in here. This is not my thing. And I pushed through because, you know, daughter of an immigrant, you don't want to disappoint them. But we talk about it now often, you know, like, it was not my calling, and it was never going to happen for me because I didn't feel it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. For sure. I totally understand. So you double major, and then you went to like you kept going.
Yeah. Yeah. So of course I didn't go to med school. Right. So like, what do I do to make my parents happy? Right. Like, what do I do now? Cause that's another thing. Like my parents, they're thinking, oh, you go to college. Sure. You don't go to med school, but like, do you get a job? Right. And it's like, I'm applying to jobs that like I can do with a biology major. Like, it's like, I don't know what to do. So I was like, okay, like I moved back home after I graduated and it was just like, what do I do next? And, you know, again, I didn't really have that much time to like fill out what I like, what I don't like, but I knew that I do love management. I do love administration. It's something that just comes easy for me. So I was like, you know what? Like, I'm not going to be a doctor, but maybe I can do something where I can still be in the hospital. So that's what I did. I became, I got my master's in healthcare management. So that, you know, allowed me to have like, to kind of like go up in the corporate ladder in kind of like a hospital and higher education realm.
And so then what happened? So you were like, well, I'm still going to be in this space, in the ecosystem of medicine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I was working at one of like the top hospitals in Boston. I was working at the Brigham and Women's Hospital. So again, like management and administrations were something that came very natural to me. So I actually got a job as a lab manager in a research lab. So I did kind of like all the operations, hiring, like financial management, you know, we did a lot of like grants, like he, you know, the doctor I was working with, he submitted a lot of grants to get money to continue research. So I was doing that. And I did that for like about 5 years. That was like, kind of like my longest job since I graduated college. And it was extremely great. Like I was exposed to so many things. I worked in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is like a hub for all like things like biopharma, biotech. So that was like a great experience for me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But after 5.5 years, I was like, okay, like what's next? Now I'm like deep in my 20s. And what do I do now? Right. Because I was doing so many things in my head. I'm like, I have to fine tune what is it that I'm going to do so I can get like a better paying job and like more opportunities. So one of the things that stuck out from what I was doing was grant management. So, you know, managing these funds, applying to these grants, getting funding.
That's a skill.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I did that for like 5 years. So I was like, you know what, maybe this is what I need to like focus on. And then I did that. And I have been working as a research administrator ever since. And that's what I do. I manage like the funds that are going into clinical trials, the funds that are, you know, continuing research and manage that and do a bunch of like management tasks when it comes to grants.
When do you meet your boyfriend at the time, husband now?
Yeah. So we met in 2015. So
what are you doing at this point?
So I was working at the lab. I was a lab manager. I was in Cambridge working in like that tech world. And that's something that we bonded from when we first met. It was like, it was great to see someone, like he's a super hard worker and I was a super hard worker. So it was great to kind of meet someone that was like, that had the same drive to succeed. So that's definitely one of the things that like really, you know, brought us together.
Did you work together?
No, we did not. We actually met at like a bar.
Nice.
Very, very, very normal. but it's funny because when we first met, we probably like talked on like social media and like through text and things very like, very, not too much, just like a little bit. And we did that for maybe like a month and a half. And then we finally hung out like in person. And from that day that we hung out in person, like it's been ever since.
You never stop hanging out.
Yeah, we never stopped hanging out. And now we are hanging out with two kids.
Yay. So what was born first? Season by the Sun or Low Key?
I guess it was both. Because what happened was that in 2017, my husband does real estate. So in 2017, he kind of like came to me with this idea like, oh, wow, like the cannabis industry is kind of like booming right now. We should get into it. So he kind of like took the lead and applied to get a license for cannabis, which he did. But in about like 2019, that's when I got like bit by the entrepreneurial bug.
Great year.
right I know. Before then, the- right, tell me about it, okay? Like, because it's like, it's so funny how life works. So I was like, it was like, I'd say like 2018, but in 2019, I launched my business. So 2018, I was like, oh, like, I want to do this too. Like, what can I do? I started doing research. Like, how do I connect what I know with cannabis? So I'm like, okay, biology, cannabis, skincare, boom. Like, that's something that I enjoy as a form of self-care. We don't have brands that represent women of color at the forefront. So I was like, you know what? Like, that, this is something I like to do. I came up with the name Seasoned by the Sun because I am a Caribbean girl. The sun, it's like, it's just like my favorite thing in the world. Like, if I'm in a bad mood and there's the sun, I'm probably going to get in a better mood. So
yeah. And you live in Boston. I hope you get a lot of sunny days.
I tell my parents, like, why couldn't it be LA? Why couldn't it be Florida? You know, but I guess this is where the good jobs were. yeah. So I decided to like combine the two and, you know, did a lot of research on like how to merge, you know, what I knew, biology formulations to cannabis and CBD. And then that's when Seasoned by the Sun came to be.
So it came full circle. So studying biology wasn't too bad after all.
No, because that's how life is. You know, like, I really think that if you continue and not give up, like, things are going to align at some point.
Let's take a quick coffee break. I think this is a good time.
Sabrosura pa ti que.
So, Laura, do you drink coffee break? I mean, do you drink, what am I talking about? Do you drink coffee?
Yes, I love coffee. It's like when people say like, oh, how do you do it? I'm like, coffee. Like, it's, I love coffee. I specifically love, you know, two shots of espresso with some almond milk. That's my jam.
Do you make it at home?
Yeah, I do. I have an espresso and I just do my little two, you know, I need like fast coffee. Eventually when the kids are older and I have like time to make like very pretty coffee, I'll get like a espresso machine. But right now I have an espresso. I put my little pot in there and I get my almond milk going. And it's just like, it's like the first sip. It's like, you know, it's like so good.
Yes, yes, I concur. Do you have a greca, though? I think that's a very Dominican thing.
I sure do. Of course, I do. And, like, my mom was like, I don't care, like, what type of coffee you drink, but, like, you need a greca at home. And I'm like, you know what? You're not lying. So I do have my greca.
Like, I hope at least the weekends you, like, make yourself your little greca coffee.
Yes.
¿Cómo le dicen en inglés? ¿Mocha? Mocha
no,
pot, no?
Le dicen, no sé. No, I don't know. I think it's like an Italian. I think it's like an espresso machine. Like when I go on Amazon and I'm like, espresso machine, Greca's come up. And I'm like, what? Huh. Yeah.
I don't know why the name Greca came up, actually. Like, what is it, the brand? I don't know.
And do you guys call it Greca too in Mexico?
No sé. Yo le llamo Greca because my Caribbean friends told me about it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In college, I had one of my friends, she's Cuban. And she's the one that like, no, chica, tienes que tomar café from the Greca. And that's so how good. When I started calling it Greca. And she made me Cuban coffee. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is some real.
So good.
Real, real.
But it's like so rich. She like, you don't need, this is why like my dad always says like, you don't need a big cup of this because it's so strong and rich that just sip it. You know, it's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah. It's an acquired taste too.
I know, exactly.
Somebody once told me that those types of coffees are meant like one, to your dad's point, tiny, tiny, tiny sips. And also you share them. So, you know, like the Greca, also the Greca is not that big for that reason because you don't need that much.
Exactly. Exactly. It's all thought out.
It's all like intentional. So you just push the button though for now. As a busy...
Yep. As a busy mom of two, my babies are, I have a 2.5-year-old and then I have a like 14-month-old. So they're tiny.
Oh, so you just need to push a button.
Oh yeah. That's all I can do. It's the cutest thing because my son, he's like super into like the helping stage. So he like asks every morning, like he's like, mama coffee. And then we go and he like makes it for me. It's pretty pretty cute. It's pretty cute.
Super cute. Super cute. Awesome. Well, and do you have a local coffee shop that you want to give a shout out to?
I do. I have, this is like the cutest Vietnamese bakery. It's like about 15 minutes from me, but it has become like a staple for my family to go because they have like two little swings in there. So the kids love it. You know, we don't want to like sit at a table and like eat, right? They have the best Vietnamese iced coffee. Oh, delicious. It's called Sweet Green in Randolph, Massachusetts. They're delicious. Yeah. Yeah.
Vietnamese coffee is also another one, like Greca type of coffee. I don't know. I can't do it all the time.
No, my sister, I'm not going to lie, my sister got it for me and I'm like, oh, no way. Like, this is a lot of work for me. Like, I, like you have to like let it drip and I'm like, I don't have time. I don't.
Yeah. And the energy that you get, like it's intense. I feel like it's a lot.
Yeah, definitely more than like just your regular two, like double espresso for sure.
Yeah, it's probably like six plus all the sugar. Plus, like, yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's delicious, but it's like a once a year thing for me.
Exactly. Like I go and get that. Like when it's really warm here, I go and get that. But honestly, like I love making my coffee at home so much. Like if I'm going to have coffee, like it would be probably iced coffee outside of my house. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Well, on my end, I am drinking my usual. It's regular coffee with, it's mushroom coffee with powdered milk. So I'm still doing that, listeners. So my mom introduced me a while back. I don't know. I think I've been doing this for like maybe a year, maybe two. I don't know. So my mom, one time, she brought like powdered milk and it's not like half and half. Have you had powder? Like, it's a very, I think it's like a thing in Latin America.
Yeah, no, it is. It like, cause you know, Coffee Mate, they have that like powdered creamer, but I know exactly what you mean.
It's not the same. It's like whole milk.
It's not the same. It is so good. It's like insane. Yeah.
So good. And so my, so she like, I don't know. I think my tia was at Costco and she found it and she gave like, my tia is one of those people, like she finds things at Costco and she buys two of them or four of them. And then she gives my mom like, look at what I found. Like it's a thing. And so this powder milk came into her hands and my mom was like, try it in your coffee. I dare you. And I was like,
life changing.
Say no more. And I've been like stuck with this for a long time. And one thing that I will say is it actually keeps me full longer.
Yeah.
So I am that person that drinks coffee first thing in the morning. Sometimes I'm not diligent, but you know, I try to do water first. Likely it won't happen. And so I drink my coffee in the morning. And if I do the milk, the powdered milk, I feel like it me da como substance.
Yeah, for like I can relate to that. I have coffee like first thing in the morning and like I get so busy that I don't have breakfast. Like coffee is my breakfast, probably not healthy, but coffee is my breakfast and then I just skip right to lunch because I do feel like it keeps you full. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so like I mean, it bad, but not that bad, I guess.
Exactly. It could be worse. And I'm a very structured person. So I have two coffees a day. That equals four shots.
Wow.
So I have like one in the morning, first thing in the morning. And then I have my mom pick me up, you know, right before the kids kind of like are getting ready to leave daycare and come home. So I have like one in the morning and then one around like 3 o'clock.
Nice.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
3 o'clock. 3 o'clock's not my limit is like one.
Cause then you won't sleep.
Yeah, 3 o'clock I won't sleep. But I understand. I understand.
I have to make it till like 10:30. So I'm like, I need it. I need it by three.
For sure. All right, well let's get back to the show. Laura, so you get this idea of like, I'm going to start this like skincare. You have the background of biology. I've talked to several Dominicans and I know Dominican people. And I think skincare is a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And natural.
Yes. Like it's always like, let me rub some things that I found outside.
Oh yeah. Like I was the girl that was like, like slobbering like avocado yes. with honey on my face and like mayonnaise for my hair, like definitely a thing. Like
the mayo in the hair, yes.
Yeah, it's a thing. And it's so funny how like, I guess like growing up, I didn't really like, for me, it was like, it was normal. Like we're putting mm-hmm. like stuff in our face. But like now I'm like, wow, like it was preparing me for this moment. Like it's so crazy.
Totally. Yeah. So you start the skincare brand. How long does it take?
Well, so when I was like, okay, boom, skincare, this is what I want to do. I'm the kind of person, like, I really love to have some sort of, like, a foundation to feel confident in what I'm doing. So I went ahead and researched, like, where do I get, like, a diploma, like, and learn how to formulate, you know, at my house. So that's what I did. I, like, Googled and I came across this learning institution. It's called Formula Botanica. Mm-hmm. And they focus. They have, like, courses for, like, entrepreneurs that want to do skincare. So I got my diploma in organic skincare formulation. So I'm like, okay, great. Like, now I, you know, with biology, with this diploma, like, I'm feeling ready now. So I literally started, like, formulating things at home, like kind of like what I wanted to do. At first, I started doing like body oils and body butters. And that was really fun. But I definitely wanted to take it. I wanted to take it up a notch. And I was like, you know what? Like, I really want to, you know, combine it with cannabis. So when I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. This is what I want my first product to look like. Now I need it to be like professionally formulated so it can be manufactured. I started doing my research. Again, this was 2018. Massachusetts is pretty new when it comes to cannabis. So at that moment, it was difficult for me to find a manufacturer that could make like small quantities. Cause again, like I was just like an indie entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, like let's do my research. I was able to find a manufacturer in Utah, believe it or not. And they're like, yeah, like we can do small. Yeah. Super, super interesting. Like it's always like, wow, how did I find them? Yeah. In Utah. So they allowed to, so they, you know, and I liked that they were sourcing CBD, you know, very like diligently. So I started in conversations with them. We finalized the formula and the first product, it's a facial oil. It's called, I named it Me Glow because it's like my glow, right? So it's Me Glow and it's full of like natural ingredients and like fruit extracts and like just very clean. And of course the CBD. So I worked with them. I had it manufactured. I was selling it. I focused a lot on like farmers markets, vendor markets, and I had an online store on Shopify. So I was selling a lot of that there. And again, like just me, like I had my job and I was doing this and I, you know, got me a little office. My husband was very helpful and I was just, you know, cranking orders and doing all of that. And it was going really, really well. But then obviously COVID happened. So we had to pivot. We had to pivot a little bit.
Yeah. So what happened?
Well, a few things happened, right? So I had the store, I was, you know, doing orders, I was doing my own marketing. I was like one of the models myself, just like really like doing things and like learning as I went, right? I had no, in my house, in my family, like it's education over entrepreneurship, right? So I was like super blind when it comes to this and, you know, kind of like really relying on my husband to help me out. He's like a serial entrepreneur. So I'm like, okay, good. I have like a person to help me out with this.
Yeah.
So we launched and it was great. And, you know, our goal was to have it in dispensaries, but then COVID hit. And then I had my first baby and he actually was born premature. So he was born at 30 weeks and spent like 2 months in the NICU and I couldn't bring him home. So that was like, that was a pretty big like shock for me. And I just kind of like had to put Seasoned by the Sun a little bit on the side. Mm-hmm. And then our store, our Loki dispensary was like growing at the same time. We finally got our license. We, you know, we're working to build up the space. Then at that time, like when I was pregnant and Loki dispensary was like in the works, my husband and I, we had conversations, you know, like how do we build generational wealth here for our kids, you know? And we decided that the best thing for us to do at the moment was for me to kind of like step in and like, you know, the previous COO, the relationship didn't really work. So we were like, perfect. Like this is with my experience in management.
And
yeah, like, I mean, I've had extensive experience in management, administration, human resources, which is everything I did before. We were like, okay, like let's do this together. So this is what we were focusing on the most. And then, you know, I kind of like put Season by the Sun a little bit to the side. But now that the rules in Massachusetts have changed, we're actually working with a manufacturer to produce it here in Massachusetts and be able to sell it in our dispensaries and other dispensaries here first, and then hopefully like nationally.
I love that. So given that your parents are doctors, how was, like, I'm so curious about this conversation.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We're going to start this business with cannabis.
I know. It's like, we're going to sell weed. It was right. Like, yeah.
What's
it
up?
I honestly think you could understand that, right? Like, I think coming from like a tradition, like, you know, your parents being traditional, it is a tough conversation, right? Like, it's very tough. But my parents, like, they're very smart and they're very like, you know, kind of like they aware of what's going on. Like they know technology, you know, they're very like smart in that way. So when my husband, who then was my fiance, we talked to them, it was very much like, okay, here is how much money we can make. Here are the sales. Mm-hmm. This is what it's projected to do. Like, this is a business that we can do. Like, it's getting legalized whether you like it or not, right? Like, I mean, it's going to happen. So do you want to kind of come and jump on the train and be part of this? And in fact, they were. My parents are one of our investors that invested in us for us to be able to build the first store. Yeah. So it's great. Yeah.
So you presented it from a business standpoint.
Yes. Yeah. With like numbers. Like I was like this, like my dad met with my husband and I, like we show them like, this is what your money will look like. This is what's going on. I think taking that approach was so smart on our part.
Totally.
Now my dad is like, we're not even talking about consumption. We're not even talking about, you know, all the negatives that people associate cannabis with. This is like, is a business like any other business, is a retail store, like any other retail store. And I think coming from that angle was phenomenal because they invested in us.
Totally. And I will also, I mean, I think it's important to mention that while it is a business, it's also a highly regulated business.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And it's like, it's not federally regulated yet. So every state has its own like rules and regulations. And it's like, they are extreme for sure. But, you know, we are, you know, we're doing our best to keep up with them. And, you know, just really like, we have a one store, we're working on a second store, hopefully a third one. So it is very regulated. I mean, it's like, when I tell people like some of the like small little like things about our store, they're like baffled because, for example, we have over 40 cameras in our store. Our store is like 17 square feet, so it's like small, and we have about 42 cameras installed. We everything. Oh yeah, it's like super. Like everything is like sealed, like childproof. We have this thing in Massachusetts where everything has to be tracked from seed to sell. So if I sell something to you, I know which cultivator did this, which batch, all of that. So it's super, super regulated. Yeah.
So I was reading on like the various things when it comes to cannabis, marijuana, CBD, THC, all the things. Mm-hmm. And like, we could literally sit here and talk about it for hours. And I obviously don't have enough knowledge even to dive in. But one of the things that, and it's a conversation that's been talked about like so much, is that Black Americans are arrested for violating like quote marijuana possession laws four times at the rates of white Americans.
Oh yeah.
And so, yeah. However, both demographics consume it at the same rate.
Oh yeah. Like, in fact, my husband and I, the license is with my husband. We are an economic empowerment licensee holder. And what that means is that because he is Black and he is from a neighborhood that was negatively impacted by the war on drugs, then we get some sort of priority in the process because the process is like long. So we, Massachusetts, Boston specifically, is doing a good job when it comes to prioritizing those people from those communities. So it's an honor and a privilege, and we are extremely proud to be able to have a store where my husband grew up, like in his community. Like he visited the stores that were next to our store, you know, I'm talking like 20 years ago. But yeah, it is. And I can't wait to be in a place where it is not like looked down upon like it is now. And everyone that has been incarcerated is able to come out and make a business out of it. Like a lot of people have, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the thought of it is like so many people are currently incarcerated, and there's like, of course, this probably happened before regulations and before the opportunity of the business happened. And so I don't know. I always see that and I'm like, dang, if they only had waited.
It's honestly like sometimes when we first started like playing with the idea of cannabis, it was something that was in the back of my head. Like I was like, I don't feel comfortable moving forward when all these people are still incarcerated and then we're going to be making money from this, you know? Yeah. It was definitely like something to like a tug of war to kind of make that decision to dive in. But what we do is, you know, to do our best. Like all of the people in our store are residents from that community. We offer them like real estate classes. You know, eventually we're going to be able to help them with their closing costs. You know, we've really tried to pour into our community so that they also have an opportunity. You know, one of the cool things we did was when we were raising funds for this first store, we thought it would be so cool for people to be able to be part of a, you know, be investors in our store. So we actually opened up a Mainvest. I don't know if you're familiar with Mainvest, but it's a fundraising.
Like a WeFunder?
I think I would say it's about the same thing. It's an investment platform where you put up like a goal and everybody invest, and then you get, you know, depending on the contract, you can get money back. So we did that and we were able to have anyone that had any type of money to invest in our store. And we're really, really proud of that.
I mean, I think that's the power of providing opportunities to people. Like you just mentioned, your husband grew up in that neighborhood. He knows probably more about it than anyone else could. Like there's already rapport built with people in the neighborhood. And like that piece of giving opportunities to others to invest, grow, learn, expand is really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. And it's definitely like our driving force, you know, like we wanted to get into this industry because, you know, I'm a cannabis connoisseur, you know, I've consumed cannabis and, you know, it was something like, oh, wow, this is a new industry. Like, let's see what we can do. But aside from that, like, you know, we are a community dispensary and we're proud of that. And we do the best that we can to, you know, either donate or, you know, sponsor events in our community. We love to sponsor events and we've only been open since October 2023. And, you know, it's just amazing how much we've been able to accomplish since. So
how fun. So what's next?
Next is, you know, I'd like to think I devoted, you know, 2021 to now, devoted these last few years to, you know, baking my babies and, you know, growing them. And now, you know, they're thriving and, you know, it's actually like my biggest joy and pride to see. And I'm actually really excited to, you know, this year to kind of like go back or even like, I wouldn't say go back, but like new and improved Laura, you know, now I'm a mother, I do things differently, but I'm really excited to get back to, you know, to working more and doing more. I know one of the biggest things that we are working on is finally getting Seasoned by the Sun manufactured in Massachusetts and be able to sell it in dispensaries. So that's really exciting. And I'm definitely going to send you a product as soon as we have it manufactured in Boston. I would love for you to try it. So
I'd love to try it.
Yeah. So my goal is to, you know, have that here locally first, but, you know, eventually nationally and maybe open up my online store again. I think that would be fantastic. And, you know, as far as Low-Key Dispensary, we are growing. We are in the process of building our second store. So, you know, that's really exciting. And we hope to have that, you know, by the end of this year. And then, you know, aside from that, we another big part of the cannabis industry. So now we have like retail and people can grow, but now there's another part. It's called social consumption, and it's like how that's a new industry. There are not a lot of laws in there. It's a bit of like it's like an open space now, right? Like there's not a lot of laws that can guide us in the process, right? So we are part of like the social consumption group, and you know, we want to be, you know, spearheading that, lobbying for that. So I'm really excited to see like what Loki does in a consumption world. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that we're working on. Yeah.
Yes. I think like lobbying is something that we don't talk about enough. Like the possibility to go and request things to happen in mm-hmm. your city, yeah. your neighborhood, your community. It's something that we have, like that's the possibility of living in a place like the United States.
Yeah. And I don't think it's something that like, at least me, I didn't grow up knowing this, you know, it's something 100%. That I've learned in the past few years, like, oh, wow, like I can have ideas, I can pass them to people that can do things. You know, we have a good relationship with, you know, city councilors and representatives of our city. And it's, we always involve in what's happening. You always have to be involved, especially if you have a business in the community. Like these things affect you and affect your business. So it's super important for us to be involved whenever we're talking regulations, whenever we're talking laws. It's very important to be involved in that.
For sure. 100%. I think for a business like yours, who's like, which is highly regulated, there's still a lot of intricacies around it. And for anyone who has a business, listeners, like go meet your elected officials.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. I think that's something that we don't talk about enough. Go to your city council meetings. I know it's tedious. You probably don't understand a lot of things that happen, but just showing face, they need that. They need to be held accountable. They work for us.
Yeah. And I think it's like one of those things, like you can't do what you don't know, right? So a lot of people don't know that this is an opportunity, but like these people, these counselors, these representatives, this is what they're here for. They're here yes. to listen to you and to advocate for you and make these changes, right? So it's funny because I didn't see it like that before, you know?
Same. I learned about this more and more as I've been getting involved with nonprofits. So I'm on the board of a nonprofit here in San Diego. I've been on other boards before. And so nonprofits do a lot of, you know, community work. And so they have to have relationships with elected officials. And they're literally at like, you know, a phone call away. And so...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think we need to talk, like share more about the possibilities that as citizens, like residents of a neighborhood, we have access to people because they do. Like I get emails from my elected officials like, this is what we're doing and this is when our next meeting is. And you know,
this is their job.
Yeah,
yeah, this is what they do. This is like why they are elected. And I think it's kind of hard to wrap our head around it because, you know, like I think local politics is completely different to like, you know, like what we see on like CNN,
yes.
right? Like these people do seem unattainable when they're like on the TV and like, you don't know what's going on, but we are very involved with our local politicians and, you know, we are involved with our mayor of our city as well. So yeah, I think it's like super important and you're right. We should talk more about it because I didn't know much about that until like the last few years, you know?
Same. And I don't think a lot of people do. So... Listeners, share this episode with people that, like, even if it's just last 5 minutes, because it's important.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Laura, tell us all the places and spaces where we can find you.
So, I am on Instagram. It's at Laura Similian. And Seasoned by the Sun, you can catch us at Seasoned by the Sun. And Loki Dispensary at Loki Dispensary. Easy enough to remember.
Yes, for sure. And we'll have everything linked in the show notes. And if you're watching this on YouTube, we'll also have it right below where you can find all the things. So you don't have to type them frantically. We got you. Okay, last few questions. Do you have a remedio that you want to share with us?
I do. And I was so excited like when I saw that question because this is I'm not a doctor, so I don't recommend this, but this is what we do in Dominican Republic. So if you have a stomach ache, if you have an upset stomach, you're just not feeling yourself, you take a little bit of water and you pour a little bit of baking soda and you drink that. Instant.
Instant relief.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's great. It's amazing. Just water and baking soda and take that little shot and it'll make you feel better.
All right. That one's a new one. I don't think we've had that one
before. I know.
I like it. I like it. Do we have a quote or mantra that we live by?
I do. And I actually like have it tattooed here. And it says, decide to succeed. Yes. It's just simple, you know, a few words. But I do think that, you know, success is a decision. Like you decide, like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be disciplined. I'm going to achieve this goal, whether big or small. It's a decision that you make. So I have decided to succeed. So that's what I'm striving for.
I love that. I support. And the last one, do you have a productivity tip, trick, or tool to support you?
I do. So, and this is, I got this from someone when I was in college. So this is what I do. If I have something to finish, right, I'll set my timer on my iPhone and I'll set a timer for 10 minutes. And I, you know, the rule is I have to work while that timer is going, right? And then, you know, once that finishes, maybe you do another 10 minutes and you see how much you did. But I think what that does, it's like centers me and like, this is what I have to finish. And like, if you do that for like an hour, you'd get so much done because you have 10 minutes to finish what you said you were going to finish, right? So I love that tip and it works for me and I recommend it.
I've tried 5 minutes. So sometimes like if just to offer it, if 10 minutes might be a lot, sometimes it's 15 minutes, right? It's whatever feels doable. I have a client, for example, who's super busy and I'm like, do you have 5 minutes? Like in her case, it's self-care. So she's like, I don't have 5 minutes to breathe. And I'm like, well, do you have 1 minute to breathe? And so it's whatever time gets you to focus. Totally. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for coming to Café con Pam. This was awesome. All right, everyone. That was my conversation with Laura. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you were inspired. I really enjoyed the full circle moment. It was one of my favorite parts when she went on to study biology because her parents wanted it. And also, she ended up using it at a different time. I connected a lot with that part of Laura's story, and I hope to hear what you connected with. Definitely screenshot and tag me at Café con Pam Podcast. Give us a follow on whatever platform you're in. The two most popular ones, if you're listening to the podcast, two most popular ones are Apple Podcast and Spotify. If you're in either of those, please do hit the follow button. The follow button makes such a difference with our numbers. And I have shared this before. If you don't follow us because the episode will download and then you will run out of memory, there is a setting in your phone where you can tell the application not to download the episode, to simply notify you when it's a new episode drops. And that's where a lot of people have told me they don't follow the show because they're like, all your episodes every week, I get like a downloaded episode. And what if I don't want to listen to it yet? Yes, make sure you hit that setting. Also, if you feel called to support us in any way, this is an opportunity to leave a rating and a review. If we're still in the podcast audio side, this is where you can go ahead and drop some stars. It really helps also with the credibility of the show. In this case, it's not so much for the numbers piece, it's for the credibility. So when other people find us, they read your reviews, they see your thoughts, and they're like, oh, I resonate with whatever somebody else is saying. Let's give it a chance. So please do leave some reviews if that is something that you feel called to. If you're on YouTube, hello. This is where you want to please subscribe. Of course, subscribe, hit the bell so you're notified when a new episode drops. On YouTube, you don't download episodes necessarily, so we don't have to go through that process. And in YouTube, what helps is leaving comments and liking, hitting the like thumbs up part of the video and sharing it with anyone who may resonate, your primos, your primas, your amigos, your amigas, your tías, your parents, whoever you think will resonate with this episode. We so appreciate your shares. Iguana listeners, thank you so, so much for being here. I know last week I said I was going to give you a life update. I am working on it. I'm working on it. And so next week for sure, you're going to get my life update about what's been happening, what's up with my new space, and how I'm doing. So stay tuned for that. Definitely follow the episode. Follow the show if you want to be the first to know. And if you want to check out additional stories, because they're also, we're not just sharing on YouTube, on the podcast, we're also sharing written stories, head over to cafecompam.com. That's where you can find all the episode notes from this episode, prior episode notes. You can also get connected to the YouTube channel, and you can also read pour over stories. Pour over stories are so amazing because I've gotten to know people that I would have not. I mean, the podcast is too, obviously. But through the pour over stories, it's different when you read them. It's one thing to hear them. So I'm giving you some variety of content that you can choose from. And so, yeah, that's something to think about or to check out, cafecompam.com. Check out all the things that we do. El Mercadito is coming soon. This is where you can go to cafecompam.com/elmercadito and add yourself to the waiting list so you can be the first to know. I am cooking a really, really cool program, and I've been meaning to do this for a while, but then life happened, and this time, Q2, when I was talking to the team internally and we're looking for additional ways to monetize the podcast because this is a business, El Mercadito, I think it's a great opportunity that can allow us to expand not only us and grow the show, but also to support you, which is the goal always, and small businesses, because that's where my heart truly is with small businesses. Of course, the big companies can pay me all day. And El Mercadito is created specifically to offer opportunities to multiple people. So stay tuned for that. cafecompam.com/mercadito. And if anything else comes up, send me a DM at Café Con Pam Podcast. You want to listeners, thank you so much for being here. Como siempre, stay shining. Sabrosura pa ti que...